It is Monday, October 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Doug Bernard, live in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump's former campaign chairman is indicted on charges of conspiracy. The transfer of power from Catalonia to the central Spanish government begins as preparations are underway for a snap election in December.
I don't see that an election in 2 months' time will change anything substantially.
And some people say ghostly things are occurring in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. It's all ahead this half hour. President Donald Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was charged Monday with conspiring against the U.S., money laundering, and lying to the government. The charges stem from a lobbying effort for former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych. Manafort and a former business associate, Rick Gates, were indicted by a federal grand jury in Washington as part of special counsel Robert Mueller's criminal investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. Mueller also disclosed that former Trump Foreign Affairs advisor George Papadopoulos pleaded guilty October 5th to lying to federal agents in January about his contacts with people he understood to have close connections to senior Russian government officials. VOA's Sarah Williams spoke earlier with former defense counsel and VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren and asked what all this means.
Well, it's never good to be indicted. I can tell you that. I was a criminal defense attorney for years, and it's terrible that he got indicted. But in reading the indictment, I think that the president can take some comfort, and this is just the beginning, but some comfort in the allegations in the indictment. The counts in the indictment do not include any collusion between the Trump campaign, President Trump, and the Russian government. What it does indict him for, and indict Manafort, he's the former campaign manager, and Gates, his assistant, or someone who worked with him, is financial crimes. They were getting money from the Ukraine government, and they were trying to hide it from the U.S., hide it so they don't have to pay taxes from it, and they did something we call money laundering. Now, what it also accuses Manafort and Gates of is that they did not register as federal agents when they were lobbying for the Ukraine government that was very favorable, of course, to the Russians. So that's a big problem for Mr. Manafort and Mr. Gates. But it doesn't say in the indictment that there's any sort of suggestion that the Trump campaign was involved in that. The more troubling issue, which I'm sure you're going to ask me about, is the other man.
Right.
That's George Papadopoulos.
Yeah.
Now, that's a problem for the Trump campaign because he has been He pleaded guilty on October 5th to providing false statements to the FBI going back to January 27th of this year, 7 days after the President Trump was inaugurated. And he was being questioned by the FBI about potential or possible Russian interference with our election. And he apparently lied about it. I don't say apparently lied about it. He did lie about it because he has pleaded guilty to that. He pleaded guilty on October 5th. What has got all the sort of the tongues wagging D.C. among the criminal defense bar today, though, is he pleaded guilty on October 5th. It was sealed until today. We didn't know about it. Usually
this stuff
is open.
Yeah.
Well, that I don't know about, but you'll notice he has not been sentenced. He pled guilty, but he has not been sentenced. Now, that's the red flag. That means that he is, not only is he cooperating with the prosecutor on potential other people who might be involved in some criminal activities, but they're holding the sentencing over his head so that they continue to make sure that he continues to cooperate. So that's the far bigger problem, because he says in his statement in connection with the plea is that he was having conversations with people who were part of the Russian investigation, and that's of course what he lied about. And the conversations were about whether or not that the Russians had some dirt on former candidate for president, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. This is just beginning.
Right.
We don't know where this is going to lead, but that's the problem for the that's a greater problem, at least as far as we can figure out today, for President Trump and the White House. It may have nothing. They may have no problems with it, but that's the potential problem.
Mm. And then also, President Trump tweeted, talking about Manafort, that there is no collusion, and spoke about that. And I believe President Trump in the past has also spoken about potential involvement that former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton had as well, possibly with the Russians, or, you know, a deal she did with Ukraine.
Well, 2017, the new way the president communicates with people is through Twitter, that we've all learned that well. And yes, he did tweet that about Manafort, because that's sort of consistent with the indictment. There's no suggestion that there is collusion between Manafort and the Russians about the Clinton campaign or the Clinton campaign. What the president does not tweet about, though, is George Papadopoulos. That's the one I want. I want to know what he says about that one. That's the big mystery here. And that criminal complaint, or that what he pleaded guilty to, was he wasn't indicted. He did it by what's called a criminal complaint. That does talk about conversations, trying to set up communications with the Russians about Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. But I do want to underline is that we still don't know if there's a crime. But there is at least a link of information from the document to the Russians. That doesn't necessarily mean a crime happened, but you know, there's certainly a lot more explained to be done. This certainly does heighten, you know, the concern and put a bigger spotlight on it.
VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren speaking earlier with Sarah Williams. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palcheski. Andrew, this has been the proverbial busy news day, so I have to think that it's been busy out there on social media as well.
Absolutely. We are seeing a lot of reaction to these indictments coming down, to these announcements coming out. The timing is one thing that a lot of people are focusing on social media. This George Papadopoulos person cooperating with investigators reportedly, in addition to the announcement of the indictments, signals to a lot of people on social media that investigators are making a push to try to get more people to come forward.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the same time, when you have all those news of the indictments and everything, you have news that Tony Podesta, who is a Washington lobbyist connected to the Democratic Party, is resigning and cooperating with the Mueller investigation. Of course, Tony Podesta's brother, John, was Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman in the 2016 presidential election. So that news is coming out as well, in addition to all of the other news about Manafort and Gates being indicted and Papadopoulos being charged. And all these names are floating around. It's getting very confusing for people. But the one question I keep seeing over and over and over again on social media is, how deep does this go?
Mm-hmm.
There's a pervasive sense that this is just the tip of a very large iceberg that is going to go on for the foreseeable future, months, possibly years, depending on how long and how deep this investigation goes.
We're only in the second inning, in other words.
Yeah, and there's seven innings left to play, not even counting extra innings like the
right.
The Los Angeles Dodgers right. and the Houston Astros saw.
What a game. Very quickly, because I know there are other things happening out there. To what degree do you think, just reading through what people are saying, you know, it seems everybody feels this pressure to have an opinion, a sudden instant opinion on everything, without really fully understanding maybe what's going on. And this story strikes me as, I mean, it's so hard to get a grip on this story right now. I have to question how many people truly understand what is happening. And are they expressing that, or are they kind of just leaping right to, and here's my opinion on it?
I'll give you one guess as to that. No, people are leaping certainly to conclusions when they see these names, when they see these actions going on. Keep in mind that an indictment is just enough evidence to mm-hmm. proceed with charges. It is not an indictment on innocence or guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, they have been charged with these crimes, but there has to be a legal process that plays out.
Right.
Now, with George Papadopoulos, he pled guilty. There's not a lot of information about that, but the timing of it, the fact that he pled guilty in early October and it is now late October and we are hearing about this, that is something that people are jumping to conclusions about, saying, well, this is something that investigators are trying to use to get other people to come forward,
right.
perhaps suggesting, we have information as investigators. You might want to come talk to us before we have to come talk to you if you're involved in any of this.
Well, I know we're going to be talking about this for months to come. I just wonder if maybe as a break, there's something else happening out there today that has nothing to do with this story.
There is, and it's a story that honestly would have been the top story in the news if not for these indictments. And it was actually one of the top trending stories on social media all through Monday. And that's actor Kevin Spacey, of course, a 2-time Oscar winner,
mm-hmm.
a very revered, very well-respected, talented actor. Allegations made against him of sexual impropriety. An actor named Anthony Rapp alleges that Spacey made sexual advances towards him in the 1980s when Spacey was in his mid-20s and Anthony Rapp was only 14 years old. So these allegations coming out against Kevin Spacey, releasing a statement early Monday morning, right around midnight, where he said he does not remember the encounter. He may have been drunk at the time. He wasn't sure. And then in the second part of his statement, Kevin Spacey says that he's lived his life privately, but he's had relationships with men and women. And in his words, he says, "I choose now to live as a gay man." Now, this has gotten a lot of reaction across social media for a number of reasons. First of all, a lot of Kevin Spacey fans are very upset about these allegations against him, saying that if they're proven true, it's horrible. A lot of people saying they refuse to watch any of his programs anymore. There's a subset of the LGBT community who is upset that Kevin Spacey kind of lumped his coming out statement in with these allegations. They say it perpetuates the stereotype of gay men as predators.
I just saw a tweet by actor Zachary Quinto, who acts along with Anthony Rapp in some of the Star Trek movies. And he basically excoriating Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, and that's you see that from a lot of prominent LGBT folks on social media saying that why would he try to use this to cover up his crime or divert attention to his crime? Why would he make this statement now in the midst of these allegations? It's not the right time to do it, and it was not a positive move on their part. And then you see, from the entertainment standpoint, Kevin Spacey is one of the stars of House of Cards, which is one of the big television series produced by Netflix, known around the world. I was in Berlin a couple years ago, and I remember seeing bus ads featuring the House of Cards characters, so I know it's all over the world. House of Cards and Netflix have announced that next season will be the last season of that show after these allegations have come out. So we're beginning to see some ramifications as far as Kevin Spacey's working career in Hollywood. This is something that folks have kind of called the Weinstein effect. Of course, Harvey Weinstein, the Hollywood producer, about a month ago, dozens and dozens of women have come forward accusing him of sexual harassment and sexual assault. We're seeing more and more of these stories come to light now from both men and women about these cases. And Kevin Spacey's is just the latest in that trend.
Something else that we are no doubt going to be talking about for some time. Andrew Palcheski, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Andrew Palcheski is VOA's social media editor. Here's some of the top news headlines that we're tracking at this hour. Special U.S. envoy to the Middle East reports important progress in Mideast peace talks. The African Development Bank has called off proposed loans to Nigeria. Foreigners are among suspected IS-linked suspects arrested in a foiled terrorist attack in Turkey. And Uhuru Kenyatta declared winner in Kenya presidential poll once again. Much more on these and many more stories at our website, voanews.com. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A small object thought to be an asteroid or maybe a comet was discovered recently by an astronomer at the University of Hawaii's Pan-STARRS 1 telescope. While discovery of such an object might be considered somewhat ordinary, where it is thought to have originated makes it remarkable. Scientists studying the object's speed and trajectory says it appears to have come from somewhere in the galaxy but outside of our solar system. If true, they say this would be the first interstellar object to be observed in the solar system and confirmed by astronomers. The object was discovered on October 19th after passing close to the Sun on September 9th. It's thought to be less than 400 meters in diameter and is currently traveling at a speed of 44 kilometers per second. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Doug Bernard, live in Washington. Coming up, 'tis the season for things that go bump in the night. First, Spain's state prosecutor says he will seek charges of sedition and rebellion against ousted Catalan cabinet officials. Attorney General José Manuel Massa also called for charges of embezzlement against Catalonia's leaders over their push to separate from Spain. But Catalonia's separatist party announced it would run in an upcoming snap election in December, set up by the Spanish government after it dissolved the regional parliament. Both announcements came as Catalonia entered its first week after the Spanish central government's assertion of control over the would-be breakaway region. Hundreds of thousands marched in the regional capital, Barcelona, Sunday, against independence and for Spanish unity. Monash University senior lecturer Stuart King tells International Edition's Victor Beatty that while impressive, this was not a big showing by Spanish standards.
The local police force, not the Catalan police force, but the local Barcelona police force, estimate there was about 300,000 people in the demonstration. And to put it in context, at the beginning of the Second Gulf War, for example, there were over 1 million people protesting in the streets of Barcelona. So in terms of Spain, it is a substantial number of people, but it's not a very large number of people.
Does it suggest that the region is divided with regard to independence?
It is. The region has been divided. In some ways, this is the problem that not recognizing the referendum has caused, because now we see those people who did not vote in the referendum take to the streets in support of being within Spain. And I think a referendum would have allowed the Catalans to make a clear decision about the future of Catalonia in relation to Spain.
Well, won't the election December 21st do that?
No, I don't think so. People voted elections for lots of different issues, and I think I was surprised that the election was coming so soon afterwards. I can understand why the central government would do so, because they don't want to have an extended rule in Catalonia because it will seem like they are taking over. But I don't see that an election in 2 months' time will change anything substantially. We will still get substantial numbers of people voting in favour of pro-independence parties, and we will get substantial numbers of people voting in favour of pro-union parties. But people vote, you know, traditionally for parties for lots of different reasons, not just for the question of independence.
But conceivably, we could be back where we started with a pro-independence regional government.
That is exactly the point. That's why I'm quite surprised by the elections, with calling the elections within such a short time frame.
Did Madrid make a tactical error there?
They are very careful that they don't want to be seen to take over Catalan institutions. There's a long history of this going back to 1714, initially when Catalan political and legal institutions were taken over by Madrid. Again, this happened in 1939 at the end of the Spanish Civil War when the Franco regime came to power. So they don't want to be seen to be repeating what in Catalonia is seen as an invasion or, you know, a coup d'etat.
Monash University senior lecturer Stuart King. He spoke with VOA's Victor Beatty. The World Meteorological Organization is reporting that greenhouse gas emissions in Earth's atmosphere have reached the highest level ever in over 800,000 years. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch in Geneva of the WMO's annual Greenhouse Gas Bulletin.
The report is being released in advance of next week's UN climate change negotiations in Bonn, Germany. It is meant as a wake-up call to nations that time is running out to take the necessary actions to prevent global warming. The World Meteorological Organization reports CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere surged at record-breaking speed last year to historic highs. The WMO says CO2 levels are now 145% higher than pre-industrial levels. It warns this has the potential to change the climate systems in unprecedented and disastrous ways. WMO Secretary General Petteri Tala says this is already occurring. He tells VOA scientists have been able to track the variability of carbon dioxide concentrations for the past 800,000 years.
We have far exceeded this natural variability that took place in the past, and we are giving extra energy for our planet. And we have already started seeing growing amount of natural disasters related to weather. And for example, the economic losses related to these disasters, they have tripled since the 80s. So that's a consequence of climate change.
The report finds CO2 contributes more than 60% to the heating of the planet, and that human activity and natural climate variability are behind the substantial increase in greenhouse gas concentrations. Talis warns temperature increases will reach dangerous levels by the end of the century without rapid cuts in CO2 and other greenhouse gas emissions. He says measures to mitigate climate change must be urgently taken. Talis says work on developing renewable energy systems and transportation systems, including electric and hybrid cars, must be accelerated. He adds these low-carbon technologies can play an important role in reducing greenhouse gas emissions and lowering Earth's heat for future generations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And you are listening to the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition, coming to you live from Washington, D.C. I'm Doug Bernard. Well, Tuesday is Halloween in the United States, the spookiest day of the year. Some people like to use the holiday to visit scary attractions like supposedly haunted houses. In historic Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, a ghost tour takes visitors to places that are said to be haunted. But that's no surprise to locals, who say they often see and hear paranormal activities. VOA's Deborah Block has the story.
The tiny, serene town of Harper's Ferry is full of 19th century buildings where tourists come to see the sights and enjoy the shops, restaurants, and inns. But behind the serenity, there are restless spirits from the paranormal world.
The whole town is haunted. I mean, people have seen things. I mean, you could probably ask anybody in town that's been here or born and raised here or works in here, they've seen something.
Alyssa Levasseur works at the John Brown Wax Museum, where displays illustrate the life of the abolitionist who believed slavery could end only through armed insurrection. The museum is in what used to be a family home.
I've heard kids, I've heard footsteps, and I know that they're here.
At the True Treats Historic Candy Store, manager Tara Dockman is known as the Ghost Lady for her paranormal abilities. She says two ghosts frequent the store, a woman and a man named Colby.
The female has a white flowy gown, and she goes from the top of the stairs on up to the top of the store, and the Colby likes to show himself. He usually has a shoulder or his pants leg, you'll see. They also like to throw candy around. They also have shown themselves in shadows and slamming doors on customers.
It's dusk outside St. Peter's Church, where historian Rick Garland begins his weekend ghost tours.
Who believes in ghosts?
He stops at a building where a woman named Shirley experienced a terrifying paranormal incident in the 1960s.
And the whole door violently shakes for a few moments. And then Shirley hears what sounds like something or maybe someone falling down the stairs. She's right at the bottom of the stairs. All she has to do is turn and look. What does she see? Nothing.
Garland encourages people to take photos and post them on his Facebook page. Ghostly figures have shown up in the pictures, as well as other images attributed to ghosts, like a ball of light called an orb and a light stream known as a vortex.
I tell people when you go out to take pictures, it does seem to hurt and might help if you dress a little bit like they dressed.
After taking the tour, William McGinty said he's not convinced ghosts are real.
Your mind can play funny tricks on you. I hear noises in my house sometimes.
But for the ghost lady of Harper's Ferry, the spirits are everywhere.
You really do have to debunk the, you know, the creaking and stuff like that. But once you get past that and the stuff starts touching you and throwing stuff at you, don't tell me that it's not for real.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Harpers Ferry, West Virginia.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
And that's it from us here at International Edition for this hour. We hope you'll be with us again tomorrow, same time. Until then, have a good day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. and its international allies and partners are taking new steps to ensure that President Donald Trump's vision for a world that is secure against terrorist threats is realized, said U.S. Coordinator for Counterterrorism Nathan Sales in a recent interview. One of those steps is the recent endorsement with partners of the Global Counterterrorism Forum of the Anatolia Memorandum on the Protection of Soft Targets.
The Anatolia Memo contains a number of practices for governments and private sector entities to use together in cooperation to protect places to which the public is invited. Stadiums, restaurants, parks, sidewalks, against terrorist threats. This is an increasing trend that we're seeing overseas. We're seeing it here at home, and so it's important for us all to work together to secure our public spaces against terrorist attacks.
The United States, in partnership with Morocco, also recently announced the launch of a new initiative to address the growing threat posed by homegrown terrorists. We've seen in the past 3 years a number of foreign terrorist fighters who have traveled to Iraq and Syria to fight with ISIS, some of whom have come home and perpetrated deadly terrorist attacks, said Ambassador Sales. But that's not the only threat we face.
We also have to be mindful of people who are inspired by ISIS or inspired by Al-Qaeda. They may not have a membership card, they may not have any battlefield experience, but it doesn't take much more than simply renting a truck and driving it into a crowd. So the threat of homegrown terrorism, people without any operational ties, is a very serious problem. It's a threat that's on the rise, and it's one that we're going to be focusing on.
The United States and Global Counterterrorism Forum partners are also focusing on strengthening criminal justice and other rule of law institutions that confront terrorism.
Counterterrorism is not just for soldiers. It's not just for spies. It's also for cops. And so part of what we've done here in the United States is create capabilities for state law enforcement officers and federal law enforcement officers alike to partner together to bring cases, to bring criminal charges in cases where that's warranted.
We're doing the same sort of thing, said Ambassador Sales, standing up these capabilities with partners around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.